Hello and welcome to the menu on Monocle 24. I am Marcus Hippie. This week, restaurateur and author Mandy Yin on her mission to make Malaysian cooking better known around the world.
Malaysian food is reasonably complex in that we are a multiracial society. It is a melting pot cuisine.
We will also meet Turkish chef Esra Muslu, who has launched a number of successful restaurants in Istanbul and has now shifted her gaze to London.
It will be more home-style cooking. It won't be looking like very perfection line, but the flavor is all there. It's like very punchy, very tasty, and the very Moorish flavors that just join together.
And of course, we'll hear a dinner soundtrack recommendation too. That is all ahead on this edition of The Menu here on Monocle 24. We start today with Mandy Yin, whose restaurant Sambal Siok in North London has a loyal fan base, which is not a surprise as she cooks some of the best Malaysian food in Britain. And now Mandy's mission to make the cooking of her home country better known has reached another level as she's just about to release her debut book Sambal Siok, the Malaysian cookbook. It has 90 accessible recipes on its pages and many of them familiar from the restaurant. I caught up with Mandy a bit earlier to talk about Malaysian food, great hospitality, and why the food of her home country is not better known.
I was born in Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia, and I moved over to London with my family when I was 11 years old. So, yeah, I immediately realised that the food culture in the UK was completely different to Malaysia. You know, in Malaysia, our lives revolve around food. We eat six times a day, like breakfast, brunch, lunch, afternoon tea, dinner, supper, you know, and there's just so much food available anytime you want. And I realised after living here for a while that Malaysian food was just completely underrepresented. So when I started my business nearly a decade ago, maybe there were a handful of Malaysian restaurants in London. And I thought, I need to change that. You know, it deserves more. And that's why I started my business, really.
Now, tell me about those reasons. Why do you think it is that Malaysian food is not as well known as, say, cuisine from Vietnam or Thailand?
I just think that it takes time for a cuisine to be known. And other sort of nationalities perhaps have had more help. So, for example, the tourism board in Thailand has been very aggressive in terms of promoting its cuisine and immigration as well. You know, so Chinese and Indian perhaps had more immigrants to the UK than Malaysians historically. And Malaysian food is reasonably complex in that we are a multiracial society. So we have the majority Malay indigenous people who are Muslim, and then Chinese like myself. Indians, Eurasians, tribal people who live in eastern Malaysia in Borneo. It is a melting pot cuisine. So there's a lot going on. Perhaps that's why it hasn't been so well known in the West. But, you know, it revolves around curries, stir fries, braises. So if you can conceptualize and are comfortable with those things, then Malaysian food is right up your street.
Well, considering how much there is going on in the food world of Malaysia, all these different influences, also from a number of other countries, what is your interpretation? You've got 90 recipes in this book.
Yes. So I was, of course, lucky to have grown up and had some formative experiences in Malaysia and all the food memories and flavours that I had growing up there. My mum is a wonderful cook, so I watched her all the time growing up. She was a housewife, so she had dinner ready for us every day during the week. At 6 p.m., my dad would come back from work and we would religiously have dinner as a family every evening. But then at about 8, 9 p.m., we would then go off to a night market and have, you know, just a snack to share between us. So yes, it was a rich lifestyle in terms of food culture growing up in Malaysia. And I had primary schooling there. Every day I had laksa practically for lunch. And school dinners in Malaysia are very different again to the UK. In Malaysia, it is like a big food court and there's lots of freshly cooked food, you know, lots of vegetables, variety, rice. Whereas in the UK, it's like dried up old pizza and, you know, turkey twizzlers and cup of soup and a bun. You know, it's very, very different. So yes, it's just drawing from my childhood memories that I've used for my food career and in this book.
Tell me more about your favourite recipes. Then you've got 90 recipes in this book, Sambal Siok. What would be, say, your top three favourites you find yourself cooking regularly?
So for sure, my signature curry laksa, that is the absolute bestseller from the restaurant. The recipe is in here. It's in full detail. So, you know, no holds barred. If you like strong, punchy flavours, spicy food, then the laksa is for you. There's lots of chilies in it. I love my chili heat. And so my general position is that I don't bother to deseed any chilies because what's the point? I mean, you know, if you're going to use a chili, use the whole thing. So I love the laksa recipe. And then I also have, I was so pleased with the roti canai recipe. Roti canai is a crispy, flaky flatbread that we have all the time in Malaysia. It's from originally the Indian subcontinent. And it's just magic dough that stretches diaphanously. And I've spent my whole life trying to crack this recipe. And so many recipes for this dish that we've had, that I've seen, include either egg or condensed milk. And I refuse to believe that the hawkers that sell the roti in Malaysia will use these more expensive ingredients. So I was so happy to finally crack it, which only literally has plain flour, oil, water, a bit of salt, and it's just magic. So I danced around my kitchen. I had spent a week eating roti religiously to crack this recipe. And then otherwise, there's also my chicken satay burger, which was actually my unique product, which launched my food business back in 2013. I started off in street food and I needed a sort of portable, accessible product. And hence the chicken satay burger was born. And that recipe gave birth really to several others that I now use at a restaurant, like the fried chicken with peanut sauce.
How difficult is it to prepare these dishes? I'm wondering, are there some techniques many readers may not be familiar with? Or are there some ingredients that are difficult to find? Or do you need to buy something for your kitchen that you may not have already?
I would say that the vast majority of these recipes are very, very straightforward. Yes, you may need to get a handful of basic Malaysian pantry items. For example, shrimp paste, lemongrass, tamarind paste, chilies, coconut milk. But all of these things, if they're not available in your local Chinese supermarket, or even lemongrass is available in, for example, Tesco now, it's already available online. So basic pantry items like those. And in terms of technique, I would say really, really no. Like I say, Malaysian food is focused around stir fries, curries, braises. And this cuisine originated from matriarchs, you know, mothers and grandmothers, and it's reasonably simple. And of course, in the old days, my ancestors would have used a pestle and mortar, for example, to pound spices into a spice paste for the basis of a dish. But now, you know, most homes will have a food processor of some sort or a stick blender.
I was just going ask about those food processors and blenders, what your opinion is about them, because some people may feel like they want to do it the real way.
Hey, knock yourself out if you have the time to do it the inverted commas real traditional way. But, you know, we're busy people now. And my main motivation is to get a flavorful, tasty meal on the table as quickly as possible. Certainly in this book, there's a whole chapter of home style dishes and they are relatively straightforward and come from my mother's repertoire. And it's just soul food, reasonably straightforward, but full on taste.
I have to ask about snacking, because you mentioned that you used to go for an evening snack, and I was reading this book that makes it very clear that there's a lot of snacking taking place in Malaysia.
Yes, absolutely. We don't like going hungry in any way. So there's just thousands of different snacks. Like, for example, in this book, I have curry puffs, which you literally find them at the bottom of the road. You know, an auntie will have fried them in the morning and she'll just set up a trestle table in front of her house and they'll be gone in an hour. And just so many things. So lots of banana leaf wrapped rice cakes with, for example, a spiced prawn floss in the middle, or sweet glutinous rice cakes with a pandan custard. Pandan is like the Southeast Asian vanilla, long grass that grows everywhere. So many. And again, like portion sizes, I would say in Malaysia are much smaller than what I serve at a restaurant and what you typically find in the West, which allows the stomach space to eat more. So for example, a laksa serve in Malaysia will be maybe a third of the size that I serve in the restaurant, because then you can have, you know, more things.
What do you think about the evolution of Malaysian cooking? Do you think it's changing slowly, and what does the future look like?
I think Malaysian food has an extremely strong foundation. So I'm drawing from my flavour memories of growing up there. But at the same time, I am effectively a Londoner now. And so my food, I would say, may not be traditionally what you might find in Malaysia, but it's certainly very firmly ground in Malaysian flavours and tastes. But at the same time, Malaysian food, like I said, is a melting pot and continues to evolve. So you are right, you know, with immigration and, like, for example, my ancestors on my dad's side, we are Peranakan or Nonya. So that's the peoples who originated from the Chinese tradesmen moving to Malaysia in the 1400s and intermarrying with the local Malay women. And so, you know, the local women saying, oh, okay, my husband likes noodles, for example, and combining it with the spices and ingredients that they have available. Hence, the curry laksa is a product of that way of thinking. So we just cherry pick what we like from our neighbours to come up with something even more tasty.
And you always have sambal on the side. Is
typically,
that right?
Yes. Yeah, we love our sambal, hence the name of the restaurant, Sambal
Shiok. Could you explain the concept?
Yeah, so sambal is effectively a chilli sauce that can be made with either fresh chilies or cooked off chilies with the spice paste, but it's a chili sauce that we have either as a condiment on the side to give things more oomph or as an extra ingredient. Say if you're stir frying some rice, then you'll just add some sambal to perk it up. And shiok is derived from the word shock, and it means awesome or amazingly delicious. So that's the name of the restaurant, Sambal Shiok, amazingly delicious sambal.
It's nice to learn something like that. Just finally, before I let you go, what I also enjoyed about this book, what was really nice, is that you also offer some great tips for people who may find themselves heading to KL,
yes,
Kuala Lumpur. Can you tell us what your recommendations would be like? What should our listeners do in the course of one day? Where do you go for breakfast, lunch and dinner?
Oh, gosh. So, yes, I included this travel tips chapter in my book because over the last few years, so many people always used to ask me, oh, I'm going to Malaysia next month. Where should I go? And so now I can just point people at the book. So for sure, if you're staying in KL for breakfast, I would highly recommend that you go to ICC Pudu Market, which is an indoor hawker centre, and you can have the whole range of Malaysian dishes there. You have laksa, you have kaya toast with soft-boiled eggs, popiah, fresh spring rolls, anything that you might feel like you will find at ICC Pudu Market for breakfast. Then for lunch, probably I would head indoors into a mall. So I love the food court at Isetan in Lot 10, the mall in KL, in central KL. And the idea of this mall and the beauty of it is it's air conditioned, which you really, really need in the tropical heat of Malaysia at lunchtime. And the idea of this food court in Lot 10 is that it collected all the best hawkers in KL. So you'll find Penang char kway teow with duck egg. You'll find ice kacang, which is like a shaved ice dessert there. Also bak kut teh, which is a herbal pork soup with rice and clay pot noodles. You know, amazing variety there. Then for dinner, I would definitely head to Roti Valentine, which has no aircon, so be prepared for that. But it is honestly the best roti that you'll find in Kuala Lumpur, in my opinion.
Mandy Yin there, and her book Sambal Shiok, the Malaysian cookbook, will be released on the 14th of October. Let's next continue with this week's food and drink headlines. Here is Monaco's Fernando Augusto Pacheco.
The results of the world's 50 best restaurants are in, and it's given the residents of Copenhagen reason to celebrate. Noma topped the list, and another tasting menu restaurant in the city, Geranian, bagged the second spot. In a recent rule change, those who have won the award are disqualified from being on the list again. However, Noma's current location only opened in 2018, giving the restaurant eligibility to be crowned the winner for an impressive fifth time. Next up, to Spain, where a heated battle has broken out over Padrón peppers. Antonio Fernández, the mayor of Padrón in northwest Spain, has attempted to license the Padrón pepper brand. Farmers of the region were incensed, but before things could get too spicy, the row went to the European Union's Intellectual Property Office. The ruling there came down in favor of the farmers, finding only peppers grown within distinct geographical limits can be described as authentic peppers of Padrón. And this month, Massimo Bottura's Gucci Osteria restaurant will open in Tokyo. The restaurant will occupy the fourth floor of the luxury brand's second flagship store in Ginza. This is the third such venture after similar ones in Gucci stores in Florence, Italy, and California in the US. The restaurant will open at the end of October, and reservations are already being taken. Given the Michelin stars Botura's other Gucci restaurants hold, expectations for this one are high. And finally, celebrated Spanish chef José Andrés has announced he's setting up his own media company. José Andrés Media will produce television series, books, podcasts, and more, focusing on food-related stories and the culture of food. The first show will be a 6-episode docu-series set in Spain, and will no doubt be the one to look out for. Those are the headlines for this week. Back to you, Marcus.
Thanks, Fernando. You are listening to The Menu on Monocle 24. It's almost time for a dinner soundtrack recommendation, but before that we meet one of Turkey's finest chefs, Esra Muslu. She has a number of restaurant launches under her belt from Istanbul, and she's now getting ready for her UK debut. The restaurant Zahter will launch in London's Carnaby in just a few weeks' time. So what to expect, and what is it London should learn from Istanbul? Here is Esra.
Basically, it will be seasonal fruit and vegetables. It will be more home-style cooking. It won't be looking like very perfection line, but the flavor is all there. It's like very punchy, very tasty, and the very Moorish flavors that just join together. We are going to use two elements in the kitchen. It's the charcoal and wood oven. I don't have any gas stove or anything in the building. All the flavors will come from that. It's very old school techniques we are going to use.
How did this happen? Did someone ask you to launch that restaurant in London, or was it something you had been dreaming of for quite some time?
I think I am, because I love cooking in charcoal, grilling food and vegetables. I love the flavors, the smokiness, and the wood oven. I've always had a wood oven in my restaurants. They're cooking very slowly. They get a big lamb, put them with the fresh ingredients, tomatoes and herbs and stuff. They just cook them like 8 hours. When you take them out, the smokiness and the meat smells in your mouth. It's like one of my favorite things to eat, I think.
You've gained recognition. You worked at Soho House Istanbul, and then you've been working for Ortolenghi over here in London too. Now that you're launching your debut restaurant in London, let's remember you have launched, 4 restaurants in Istanbul already earlier. How different is it to open a restaurant in London compared to what it was like when you did that in Turkey?
I think I have more connection in Turkey. I'm Turkish, and I'm living, if you look in that side, 4.5 years in London. I still meeting new people. And then I feel I'm very lucky, so many people still helping me, but sometimes I get stuck and I'm like, oops, I'm stuck here, I shouldn't be. And then I go back again, like study again and then find a solution, how can I do it better way, suitable for way to London.
Can you tell me more about those differences on a practical level? Do you think the London audience, for example, wants something different if you think of what people who go out in Istanbul, is it different from what people may be looking for in London?
I think I love about London, people doesn't care how is the weather is like, the going out. Whatever happens, if it rains, snows, everything, people goes out, and I love about London. In Turkey, people can get cancelled for dinner reservation. And then the people go travels a lot far away for the food as well, and I love about this. And the small, tiny restaurants, people are queuing for half an hour, 40 minutes for just eating that tasty foods. And I love about London. And then in Istanbul, it's completely different. We are like 24 hours, everything going on as well. But I think we don't have that much patience for waiting in the queue. If it's not there, okay, we jump for the second lot. If it's raining, if it's cold, we say, no, not today. We go for tomorrow.
Was launching a restaurant in London a long-time dream for you?
It's amazing. I'm so excited to just seeing, because I'm going to cook very traditional cuisine of Turkey, and we don't eat a lot of kebabs and stuff. I'm doing more home style, more vegetables, a lot of fish grilling and lots of salads. See, I want to see people if they can really like the cuisine what I'm going to cook. It's completely different, but I think what they're going to accept of us seeing that. But let's see.
Have you been doing a lot of market research? Have you been checking out what Turkish restaurants in London have been doing so far?
Yes, I know all of time.
And what are your conclusions?
Not a lot of restaurants doing home-style cookings like a dolmas. You don't see them. And olive oil dishes, you don't really see them. But you only eat that side of Turkey. in here is like a more based on kebabs and the mezes. But when you eat the mezes, we have a two type of different mezes happening in Turkey. If you go to fish restaurant, you eat completely different type of meze. If you go to the kebab place, you eat completely different type of meze. And then I think I'm like in both of them. I'm not just going to do one type of cuisine. I'm going to pitch all different regions and the different flavors as well.
I think it's interesting talking about what kind of food you prepare. Also, the name of the restaurant carries a meaning for you.
Yes, it's Zahtar. Zahtar is one of my favorite wild thyme, actually, to use. It only grows Middle Eastern in the mountain. When is the season? If you go to Antep, Hatay, that region in Turkey, you will see one guy pulling a car, by hand car, selling like people buy for their house for a kilo. And you just blanch it, put nice lemon juice and olive oil. You eat it like that. It's so umami, it's so tasty, so nice aromatic flavors happening. And then when you put it into the salad or if you put in, when you're grilling your fish, you put into the, your fish, it gives so amazing smell, taste. And I like to use that type of fresh herbs to my cooking. And this is one of my favorites.
Now that we are doing this interview, you are busy choosing materials for your restaurant and you're kind of like in the building process. Is it true that every single piece of furniture, crockery, artwork and kitchen equipment is going to be brought over from Turkey?
It is. Every single item. Like, this is my every single day. And now it's like Saturday, second truck coming. Every truck takes 10 days from the custom. I know all the details now. Every single things are getting purchasing from me and the, all the handmade plates. Yeah.
Why did you choose that path?
Because, like, I know what I'm getting. I say to you, I think this is my first restaurant in London now. I know where I need to go to pick things from Turkey. It's easy for me. But saying that, all the tiles been handmade. And then you will see in the wood oven wheel covered with that and the bar and everything is the design for Ottoman Empire designs and all that. And this is only I can get it from Turkey. If there is no, I choose it from there.
You've been talking about your cooking style. Have you locked in any specific dishes for the menu yet? Can you tell me about some possible highlights people may find in this restaurant once it opens towards the end of October, beginning of November?
I will have always smoked aubergine, always in my menu, my favorite dish to eat since when I'm a childhood. And slow cooking lamb shanks always will be in the menu because they are so tasty and yummy. And like the when you see it, meats coming out of the bone, and then when you take out from the wood oven, the smell is so divine. And then finish it with a little bit dukka on top, gets the crunchiness from there. Yeah.
You've been working in kitchens both in Turkey and in London. You've been going back and forth. I'm wondering, now that you are in London, how different is the kitchen culture? What happens in kitchens when you compare Turkey to London?
I think it's the same. You have a two type of people. Some people in the kitchen, what I find out, doesn't matter where you are, do this job, they just want to earn the money. But I think it's all the jobs like that. Some people do it by the heart, and you can tell that. That person who does with the money, they check their time. And who does with the heart, they want to know all the details. How patient they doing, you see through their eye. And then they want to taste every single thing in the kitchen. And then if you find that type of stuff, it's amazing. You click. Because I love working in the kitchen early, 6 o'clock in the morning. I love to open my kitchen, always I did. And then I love to touch the food. I love prepping with my staff. Have a breakfast with them, even though I can tell them that I make the breakfast today for everyone. I don't mind because this is makes us more family. And then you start talking about food. And then the most creative parts coming from there. Everybody start to take care of their stuff. And then if you say one guy, if they do just grill charcoal, nah. And then everybody have to help each other as well is for my team.
I like the way you talk about looking after your team. I'm wondering, can you name any individuals or can you name any places where you've been working? Where have you learned the most and from who have you learned the most in your career?
Actually, I can tell you one thing. How I love the food, the cooking, this way I could say, when I was 18, moved to London. I was living in one lady's house, and she was a Jewish lady, and she taught me how to cook. Yes.
You learned to cook in London?
Yes, when I was 18. And then she was amazing, and then it was main thing we were talk about food. The kitchen was huge, and she had a spice cupboard. It's like quite big, and she well-traveled lady. And all the spice was there, huge garden. She was growing all her fresh herbs. And then she has a best friend called Ernestina, Italian lady. She used to come once a week cooking Italian cuisine. And another was she was Jewish. She was cooking the Jewish cuisine from heritage from her grandmother. And the food was amazing. And then we were just cooking and drinking and one of my best times. And after that, I decided to move to Melbourne, study to become a chef. I learned a lot of them. How you need to taste, how you need to smell, how delicate is the food. If you give your passion for it, it turns up amazing dish, and then always have to be generous for everyone. It's amazing seeing all that.
So you are about to launch your restaurant, Zarte, towards the end of October or beginning of November. What do these following weeks look like for you? Do you think it's going to be stressful right before the launch?
Yes and no. I try to get...
You've done it before.
Yes. Of that reason, I think I don't want to stress myself, because if I stress myself, it won't going to help me out. I want to enjoy all the moment. Even if something's getting delayed, I say, I just take a breath. Okay, this is like, I need to learn from something. And I just say, okay, let's move focus for the another area of the building, because the building is quite nice. It's amazing. And then if it's some problems over there, and then we just move to second lot, it's like, okay, let's finish this one and we will come back for that. I think I learned that. And it still is like every single day when I look at the building, it's like, wow, I get the goosebumps, like, and ooh, okay, I cannot wait.
Esra Muslu there, and her restaurant, Zahter, in London's Carnaby, will be open a bit later this year. And that's all for this edition of The Menu. Remember that we are back with a new episode again on Friday at 20:00 London time. That's at midday if you're listening in Los Angeles. Meanwhile, do check out our Menu spin-off show, Food Neighbourhoods, for great recipes. This show was researched by Charlie Filmacourt and Sophie Monaghan-Coombs, and edited and mixed by David Stevens. I am Markus Hippi. Once again, we finish this program with a dinner soundtrack recommendation. This week we hear from Malaysia's own Yuna. Here she is with Usha. This song is called Crush. Thanks for listening.